So this is the last lecture about the normalization. And so you already discussed two main steps of the renormalization. We discussed the main idea that we are sort of zooming out of the system. And as we zoom out of the system, the scale is changing. And then as the scale is changing, actually the coupling constants, which appear in your Landau-Ginzburg functional, they get changed as well. And if you write, you can write down the differential equation for how these coupling constants change. And we derived that yesterday by explicit calculation using the cumulant expansion here. Okay, and so we derived the following RG equation, renormalization group equations, where you always have d of the coupling over dl, where you can think about l as a fictitious time which characterizes the curve in the parameter space of your coupling constants. So there'll be some flow in the couplings, as you will see very, very quickly. So you have coupling one, coupling two, and so on. And there'll be some curves. And so the parameter L simply characterizes where on that curve you are. And you can think about it as a fictitious time or a renormalization group parameter. And so this thing here is called renormalization group flow. And of course, you know, each point on this curve corresponds to a different scale, if you want. Okay. So now we also learned that so the right-hand side is called a beta function of this RG flow, and beta corresponding to the corresponding coupling. So beta R here, beta U here. And then we know that the leading term is given simply by the dimensionality of the coupling times that coupling. And so you can always write down the leading term here. However, to add the next two leading term, which are these two, you have to do the calculation. And so we did the calculation to the second order in the cumulant expansion, in the S-interacting path expansion, if you want. And then you get this thing here. So k is just a constant, which depends on your cutoff, and it depends on the area of the d-dimensional sphere, and epsilon is 4 minus d, which is the parameter which we introduced last time. So this was result of yesterday's calculation. And so let's use this result, and let's see what kind of physics we actually get out of here. So if you want part three fixed points, in small epsilon expansion, and so we know that the fixed points are probably related to our critical point, and so we will now be studying the fixed points of these RG equations, and we will again do it very crudely. So what we want to really find is, so the fixed point is where the beta function vanishes. We have beta r equals to 0 equals to beta u. And so this will give us the fixed point. And as I said, we will do a epsilon equal to 4 minus d expansion. So that means that we will treat epsilon as small, and we will expand everything to the order, to the leading order in epsilon, and throwing away epsilon square. So leading order up to O epsilon terms, and everything else will be thrown away. Okay. So now the first task we have to do is that we have to find the fixed point. So solving really beta r equals to 0 and beta u equals to 0. So now one of the fixed points is very simple. So if you look at this, everything is proportional to some power of r and u and here and there. So one fixed point is very, very simple. It's just 0, 0. R equals to 0 and u equals to 0. So we have definitely, I'll denote these fixed points by star. And so 0 and 0 obviously solves for our fixed point. This fixed point is called Gaussian. Fixed point. Or sometimes mean field theory fixed point. Mean field theory fixed point. So for the reasons we will discuss in a minute. However, that's not the only solution. And you will have another fixed point. So there's another one. And so to find it, you'll use the approximation. So remember, this lambda is a cutoff. It's quite large. But what you'll find is that if you look at this equation here, then you have term epsilon times u. And that has to be balanced by the term u squared. So what is this telling you is that actually u is proportional to epsilon. And we treat epsilon as small. So once you know that u is proportional to the epsilon, then you look at this equation. And then you conclude that r has to be proportional to epsilon as well. OK, so r is also small in our epsilon expansion. And that allows you to actually neglect the r in the denominator of these things. And then you can solve it easily. OK, so we know that r is proportional to epsilon, as is u. And so we, the first approximation, we neglect r in the denominator. Okay. So now if you do that, and you can easily solve this thing here. So then the beta u equal to 0 equation simply gives you that epsilon u minus 3 halves u square kd over lambda to power 4. So by the way, we'll be using this approximation only when we are finding the fixed points. But OK, whatever. So this is equal to 0. So now that gives you that u is equal to two thirds epsilon lambda to power 4 divided by kd. And then if you plug it into the first equation, then you know that r is just u over 4 minus kd over lambda square. Again, that's the approximation. We are neglecting the r in the denominator. And if you plug for what u is, then you have 2/3 and 1 over 4. So it's 1 over 6, epsilon over 6, and then lambda to the 4 divided by lambda square. This lambda square. And then kd gets away. So we have another fixed point, which is r star u star equal to minus epsilon over 6 lambda square, and then 2/3 epsilon lambda 4 kd. Okay, so that's another fixed point. And this is the interesting one. This is the one which was awarded the Nobel Prize. And so it's called Wilson-Fisher fixed point. Wilson-Fisher fixed point. Okay, so now we found the fixed points. The next step is to look at how things behave in the vicinity of the fixed point. So one of the groups actually in the front end, they gave a beautiful talk about linearization of some equations and about basically analyzing what's happening around the fixed points. So I'll be doing precisely that now. So ask details, you know, people of that group, and so they'll be able to explain you. Okay. So what we want to do is that we want to linearize the RG equations. Equations around the critical point so we want to learn what's really happening in the vicinity of that critical point and so of course what it means is that we Taylor expand the beta functions So now introducing a parameter delta r, which will be r minus this critical r, and similarly for u, delta u, u minus u star. Then you can write down, because we have two parameters, so you can write down this linearization in the matrix form. And so the matrix form will now be like d over dl, which is the left-hand side, now of a column vector delta r delta u. Of course, r star is just a constant, so what really stands there is d over dl of r and d over dl of u, right? Because if you differentiate constant, you get zero. And so this will be given by the corresponding Taylor series, and you can write it as a matrix d beta r over dr, d beta r over du, d beta u over dr, d beta u over du, at the fixed point, r equals to r star, u equals to u star, and then times the vector delta r delta u. Okay, so it's just a Taylor expansion written as a matrix thing. Okay, so we are neglecting the higher order terms. We are just having the terms linear in delta r. So now people call this matrix M. And it's an interesting matrix, which captures the behavior of these RG equations close to the fixed point. Okay. So now let us calculate what this matrix is. So we know what beta r is, but here I'll be doing the following. I'll first calculate it for the full beta r for and full beta u, and then I'll make the change that r is much smaller than lambda square in the denominator. Okay, so let's do it that way. So then we have that m is equal to, well, beta r divided by r is 2 plus, and then we are differentiating this 1 over r plus lambda square, so it's actually minus. That's minus u over 2 ad r plus lambda square. So now I'll attempt to differentiate things. So I will make many mistakes. So please correct me whenever you see some mistakes. Okay, so that's beta r over r. Now beta r over u is simple. It's just one half kd r plus lambda square. So that's the other entry. Now beta u divided by r. Okay, so we have 1 over r square. It's minus 2, so it's plus 3 times u square kd r plus lambda square cube, maybe. And then we differentiate that with respect to u. And then we get epsilon and then we get minus 3 u kd r plus lambda square. Okay, so now everybody agrees? Amazing. So now what you want to do is that I said you want to neglect this r in the denominator with respect to lambda square. And you, because you want to expand everything to the order of epsilon at most, not epsilon square. Okay, but at the same time, you notice here that this term is proportional to u square. So this term is actually of the order of epsilon square. So I'll neglect that term as well. Okay, so then we are getting that this is equal to 2 minus u over 2 kd lambda to power 4, and then 1 half kd lambda square, and then 0 here. And then epsilon minus 3u kd lambda 4. OK, so that's our linearization matrix. And of course, we have to evaluate it then at the corresponding critical point. So we'll have one matrix for the Gaussian fixed point, another matrix for the Wilson-Fisher fixed point. Okay, so we'll do that in a minute. So now, of course, why? It's okay, we have the matrix. And then if you have taken a course on linear algebra, then the first rule of linear algebra tells you, well, whenever you see a matrix, find its eigenvalues and find its eigenvectors. Okay, and that will tell you, you know, what's really happening with this matrix, right? So we want to eventually find, find eigenvalues and eigenvectors as the first rule of linear algebra. Okay, so we will do that. Let me do it just case by case because it will be simpler. But okay, so let us first study this Gaussian fixed point. That's easier because we know that r star u star equals to 0, 0. So then our matrix M is very, very simple. Just plug everywhere u and r equal to 0. So I'll have just 2 here. This is the same. And this is just epsilon. So this has 2, 1 half kd. Lambda square, and then 0 and epsilon. So now we want to find the eigenvalues. Well, we could have done that it there, doesn't matter. So the eigenvalues, of course, because this is quasi-diagonal thing, the eigenvalues you can read off on the diagonal already. Okay, so you have one eigenvalue, which I'll call lambda t, which is 2. And then you have another, which I'll call lambda u tilde, which is epsilon. So these are the two eigenvalues. And then the corresponding eigenvectors. So everybody knows how to find eigenvalues. Just determinant matrix minus lambda times unit matrix. And then to find the eigenvectors, you just have to solve equation m minus lambda I. So we are solving. So eigenvectors equation minus lambda I times the vector equals to 0. Of course, for the corresponding lambda here. So for lambda t, I'll get one eigenvector. And for lambda u, I'll get another one. So then vt. Um, So it's obvious that if I choose lambda t, which is 2, then this guy gets subtracted, so I get a 0 here. So definitely this will be satisfied if I put 1 and 0. So that's the corresponding eigenvector for t. And similarly, you can easily check that the eigenvector for t lambda u is, for example, of course, you can multiply by anything. I don't require that these are normalized or anything. 2 times epsilon minus 2 lambda square kd. Okay, so just check that this equation is satisfied with this eigenvector vu. But what these eigenvectors really tell you is something like principal directions around this critical point. And so if you go in these directions, your matrix M is now diagonal, and it has only the entries are the eigenvalues. That's what it means, right? So then actually you can, so in terms of the new variables, T and U tilde, your matrix is now diagonal, and these are the corresponding principal directions. Okay, so then your RG equations now become equal to precisely this diagonal, new diagonal matrix. And so you will have some RG equations in terms of new variables T and U tilde just become, you know, okay, so it's dt over dl is equal to lambda t times t, and du tilde over dl is just lambda u tilde u tilde. So this is what this is really doing. And of course, you can immediately solve them. Okay, so here, well, that gives you that t is t0 times the exponential lambda tt, lambda tl, and u tilde is u tilde 0 e lambda u tilde l. Okay, so this is the solution. And so let's be very specific. We found that lambda t is actually 2. So this is equal to t0 e 2l. And this is equal to u 0 tilde e epsilon l. So this is what we have found by diagonalizing this matrix. Okay. So now you can start plotting what's happening really with this with the couplings 2 and u tilde, or is the couplings t and u in the vicinity of the critical point. Right? So it's the phase diagram here. So let me first consider the case where epsilon is smaller than 0. So if epsilon is smaller than 0, that means epsilon is 4 minus d. That means d bigger than 4. So we have the couplings here. So we have the coupling u, and then we have the coupling t. So now remember, this coupling u was something which stood in front of the phi to the 4 term, right? So that's the coupling u. And so we argued a long time ago is that if we truncate the series at the level of u times phi to the 4, then so that the Landau's theory is well defined, u has to be positive. Okay, so your negative values actually are unphysical. So this would be unphysical region. So actually, if it happens that u were negative, I would have to do the expansion to high order, and I can truncate it only where the highest order term actually has positive definite. Okay, so now our fixed point is at u equal to 0 and t equal to 0. So this is our Gaussian fixed point here, happily sitting at 0, 0. So now we have two, yeah?
Sorry, do you mean u tilde?
No. Okay, so this is u and t. I'll mention what u tilde and t tilde are. Very good. So we started this u and r. Okay, u and r. So now we analyzed the equations close to this critical point, and we found two principal directions. One of them is given by vt. The other one is given by vu tilde. So these basically determine your new axis where the matrix is diagonal. OK, so now if you look at this vt, it's just 1, 0, so r and 0. So this is the direction where the axis is for t. So actually, r is something like the t, right? However, the other one, epsilon is negative. So the other one is this guy here. So it's 1, but it's something negative in the second slot. Okay, so that will have an axis which goes, let's say, something like this. So this would be my u tilde axis, if you want. Okay, and now you can say which way these things actually flow, because you have solved the RG equations in the new variables u tilde and t. So in particular, if you look at t, so if you start with positive t0, then because there is plus 2 times l, so as l goes to infinity, you flow to infinity. So if I start at a positive t here, I'll flow to infinity. So the flow along this axis is in this way. If you start with t0 negative, then the flow is, of course, to minus infinity. Okay, so actually, along this principal t-axis, the flow is away from the fixed point. Okay. On the other hand, epsilon in our case is negative, and so as l goes to infinity, this thing actually will go to zero. So it will actually flow to the fixed point. So along this axis, you flow. So I have this axis here, and you flow to the fixed point here. So now, this may be surprising to people who do quantum field theory. For them, such a fixed point, because you have a direction which goes away, would be unstable. Okay, this is not true in statistical physics. So in statistical physics, you can show, well, it's obvious that the r direction will always be unstable. So remember, what is the r direction? So r direction was something which was really proportional to t, not this t, but t minus tc over tc. Right? So this thing is proportional to t minus tc over tc. Right? So it's obvious that if the fixed point is to correspond to our critical point, then if we are away from the critical temperature, if we start with some, you know, above the critical temperature, we can never go to the fixed point, right? Because fixed point has to occur at the critical temperature. So actually, this direction in statistical physics will always be unstable. You can never go to the critical point if you are not at t equal to tc. Okay, so that's why. So for this reason, in statistical physics, if you find that, well, our direction always unstable, so it's the other directions which are interesting. If the other directions flow in, you call that critical point stable one. If they flow out, it's unstable. So this guy here, so G is a stable fixed point. And this is because the u tilde direction is stable. Direction is stable, meaning it flows in. And if you want, what I just said is that R direction is always unstable. Direction is always unstable. Because we are not at t equal to tc, and if you are not at t equal to tc, you can never actually reach that critical point. So now, why does this point actually describe, yes?
Yeah, I'm a bit confused. If you're not in the u-axis, you're not in the tc.
If you are not in the u-axis.
Yes. So you are at tc if you are on the u-axis, right?
Well, so what I'm trying to say, well, of course. So, so you're right that if I start, for example, here, I'm not at t equal to t critical, but I will eventually get there, right? So actually, the whole line here corresponds to, in fact, t equal to t critical. It corresponds to the critical point, because whenever I'm on that line, I will end up at that Gaussian fixed point. So now, of course, you can extrapolate what's happening around this point. And so you see that you will have flow something like this. And then you will have flow something like that. But of course, this is only true in the vicinity of the Gaussian fixed point. This is not a global picture, because we only analyzed what's happening in the vicinity of G. We linearized things. So if high order terms kick in, you cannot say what's really happening there. Okay, so now G describes mean field theory point, mean field theory critical point. And it's because that's really the t equal to t critical happens. So the critical point is really where R equals to 0, which means it precisely happens at t equal to t critical as predicted by the mean field theory, right? So remember, we defined this small t, just t minus t critical. However, this was as we actually used the mean field theory approximation. So t equal to t critical here, the t critical as predicted by mean field theory. And that's why this is called a mean field theory fixed point. Okay, so now it's very obvious what you have to do if you want to discuss the epsilon bigger than 0. So now epsilon is bigger than 0, which means d is smaller than 4. So now both things, both exponentials have positive exponent, right? And that means both directions actually flow away. Okay, so now the picture would look like mu and r equal to t. This thing still looks like, this axis still looks like the same. This still looks like the same. We have the Gaussian fixed point here. This thing is still unphysical. However, now both axes actually flow away. And so the flow is really, really away. So once you are not exactly at that point, you just flow away. And so such G is unstable. Because in order to stay there, you would really have to be at that point to start with. And so if you are in the vicinity of that point, you just flow away. Okay? And this is precisely the reason why the mean field theory fails in these more than four dimensions. Because mean field theory predicts that there is this Gaussian fixed point, and that it should be interesting for your physics, right? But that the critical temperature is given by the mean field theory critical temperature. But you find that this guy actually here is unstable, and so it cannot be the physical one. Okay, so this is the reason. Reason as to why mean field theory fails in these more than four dimensions. Because this guy is not the right guy, not the stable guy. So finally, you may start considering epsilon equal to zero, so d equal to four exactly. Unfortunately, I cannot say anything about that in our calculation. You would have to go to the higher order expansion. And so I cannot comment on d equal to 4. But at least I can comment on d bigger than 4 and d smaller than 4. OK, so that was the Gaussian fixed point. Are there any questions? Yeah?
What does the Gaussian fixed point have to do with the mean field theory? Ah.
So the only thing which has to do with the, well, OK. It's why people call it mean field theory critical thing is we shall see that it's the only one which is actually happening when d is bigger than 4. That's one thing. And second thing, it predicts that the critical temperature is given by r equal to 0. And so r equal to 0 was precisely the prediction on the mean field theory as we defined it before. So because it's happening exactly at the critical temperature predicted by mean field theory, people call this guy a mean field theory.
I just don't understand why you're calling the fixed point stable and why this is surprising for QFT.
No. Okay. So I'm calling this one stable. Just accept it, right? So I'm saying you can never have a stable direction.
You're saying it's stable, sorry.
Because one of the directions is stable. So in statistical physics, always one direction is unstable, and it's the one if you deviate from the critical. Is that true?
Yeah, the mass is unstable, the phi 4 is stable.
Okay, so then it's my confusion about QFT. So, okay, if it's the same, then it's the same. I thought it's actually really. Okay, whatever. Thanks for that comment. So now, let us consider the other critical point, which is the Wilson-Fisher point. Fixed point. So we have the expression for R star and U star here. Okay. So R star and U star is equal to minus epsilon over 6 lambda square. And then 2/3 epsilon lambda 4, or divided by kd. So now let me first consider the case where epsilon is positive. So if epsilon is positive, then we are in d smaller than 4 dimensions. And then if you want to plot this fixed point in the UT plane, U and R plane, then epsilon is positive. Of course, lambda is positive. So this guy is negative. OK? And this thing is positive. So the fixed point will be somewhere here. This is Wilson-Fisher. Fixed point if epsilon is bigger than 0. Okay. So now this is good. Because now you see that the corresponding temperature of this thing, so again, R is T minus TC divided by TC. But you see that this happens for R negative. So that means that the true transition temperature occurs for r smaller than zero, which means actually Tc smaller than Tc as predicted by the mean field theory. Okay, so this is what you would naively expect, that it must happen because the mean field theory neglects fluctuations. And if you have fluctuations make ordering more difficult. Right, so more fluctuations you have, ordering is really, really tougher to achieve. That's why you have to cool the system to a lower temperature than actually predicted by the mean field theory. Okay, so this precisely corresponds to the fact that fluctuations make ordering more difficult. And so really, this has to be true. So Tc is smaller than Tc as mean field theory, which neglects fluctuations. Okay, so before we start analyzing what's happening around this Wilson-Fisher fixed point, let me just notice what happens when you actually have epsilon smaller than zero. That means d bigger than 4. So if you have that, so epsilon is now smaller than 0. So this guy is positive, but this guy is negative. So that has actually, so this thing will have u star, which is negative. But we know that u negative doesn't make any sense, at least in our analysis, because we have to have u positive, okay? So this thing actually does not exist. So Wilson-Fisher fixed point does not exist in d bigger than 4. That's why in d bigger than 4, the only fixed point you have is the Gaussian fixed point, and is the stable one, and that's why the mean field theory is correct. D bigger than 4. Okay, so in D bigger than 4, only we have the Gaussian fixed point, and so mean field theory is correct. Okay, so now to analyze what's happening around the Wilson-Fisher fixed point in D smaller than 4, we again have to find what this matrix is, and we have to analyze what is the corresponding eigenvalues and what is the corresponding eigenvectors. So now we have this horrible expression for u star and for r star. So now we have to take this matrix and plug it in. Okay, so you see that now you are getting corrections of the order of epsilon. Okay, so this is a constant, so that's fine. So now I have to plug u is 2/3 epsilon lambda 4 divided by kd. So let's do it. So I'm plugging 2/3 epsilon lambda 4 divided by kd. Okay, so lambda 4 is gone because there's lambda 4 here. Kd is gone because there's kd here. 2 is gone because there's 2 there. And so it's 2 minus epsilon over 3. So now the matrix M here is 2 minus epsilon over 3. So I'm just analyzing epsilon bigger than 0, right? So that, then the other term was just a constant. 2 lambda square, we had a 0 in this thing here, and finally this guy here. So it's epsilon minus 3 times, and again, u is 2/3 epsilon, 2/3 epsilon lambda 4 kd, and then we have kd here, and then lambda 4. So again, this thing is gone, and we have minus 2 epsilon, so it's epsilon minus 2 epsilon, which gives you minus epsilon. So this is your matrix M, power k. So now we see the eigenvalues. Lambda t is just 2 minus epsilon over 3. And then lambda u tilde is just minus epsilon. And then you can find the corresponding vectors. So vt is again 1 and 0. And then vu tilde is 1 minus 4/3, 3 plus epsilon, lambda square divided by kd. So that's my vu tilde for this eigenvalue here. So again, the eigen, well, the principal directions are, one is that which is parallel to the axis r. And the other one is, again, going in this direction because this guy is negative. So then we have one principal direction going this way and the other principal direction going that way. And so now if you look at the eigenvalues, so lambda t is definitely positive because epsilon is small. So again, in the t direction, it will flow away. So this is my t. This is my u tilde direction. And then we are discussing the case where epsilon is positive. So then lambda u is actually negative. So this guy is now stable. So this is a stable fixed point in these more than 4 dimensions. It's a stable one. Okay. So now it's obvious that you have to put everything together. So let me just do it in, well, okay, let me do it. So the conclusions for analyzing these things is a summary for the fixed points is that if we have epsilon bigger than 0, so we are in d smaller than 4 dimensions, d smaller than 4, then we have 2 fixed points, u and r. There is the Gaussian fixed point, which is unstable, and there is a Wilson-Fischer fixed point, which is the stable one. So now you can sort of, well, the analysis is always local, so it's around the vicinity of the fixed point, but if you are clever enough, you can connect the points. So there must be something. So there was this axis which is flowing away from G, but there was something which was flowing inside of Wilson-Fischer. Right, so maybe you can actually connect the two axes. Okay, so then you have an axis like that, and an axis like that. So this guy went like that. This guy went like that. This guy, that guy, and so you can also, you know, sort of guess what's happening here. So for example, you will have flow like that, you will have flow like that, you will have flow like that, and flow like that. Okay, so this is the picture which is happening for these more than four dimensions. And so if you are exactly on this line here, on the principal direction for the Wilson-Fisher and the Gaussian fixed points, then you eventually end up at this point here. Okay? So this whole line here corresponds to the critical point, if you want. So this guy corresponds to the critical point. This line here, and you end up at this Wilson-Fisher fixed point. So that's the one which is interesting. On the other hand, if you start somewhere, let's say here, you flow away in that direction, and so you are effectively flowing to high enough temperatures, and you know that in high enough temperatures, you would have the paramagnetic phase. So whatever corresponds to the right-hand side of that line, then corresponds to the paramagnetic phase. Whatever is on the left to that line is the ferromagnetic phase. Okay, so ferromagnetic phase lives here, paramagnetic phase lives there, and the line which connects the Wilson-Fisher and the Gaussian fixed point is the line of. Okay. So now the other possibility is that epsilon is smaller than zero, and then it's much more boring. You know that the Wilson-Fisher fixed point does not exist. The only fixed point is the Gaussian one. And so then this is true. And then you have flow like that. And again, whatever flows to that point, which is the stable one, corresponds to the critical point. Whatever is on the right is the paramagnetic phase. Whatever is on the left is the ferromagnetic phase.
But then the line of phase transition is the same in both cases, right?
What do you mean is the same?
They are not.
They are not?
If they are the same, I'm asking if they are the same.
I mean, that line. Well, not necessarily, right? Because this the presence of this guy can deform whatever is happening there. Yeah. And moreover, you know, what the analysis which we did is really only true locally, so only in the vicinity of the Gaussian fixed point. Okay. So in D bigger than 4, mean field theory is correct because it's the Gaussian fixed point, which is the right thing. Here, in D smaller than 4, mean field theory is not correct because it's the Wilson-Fisher fixed point, which is interesting for the phase transition.
So R is kind of like the temperature, right?
It's T minus TC, yeah.
So what is the thermodynamic variable associated with U?
With?
What is the thermodynamic variable? Yeah.
Well, in the derivation, it was again something which sort of depended on the temperature, and the lattice constants and stuff like that. Yeah, so it's not, you know, very clear, but it's definitely not something which would be. So here, R is really proportional to T minus TC. So this is very important. It tells you where the critical temperature is, whereas U is something which is positive, but, you know, it's not necessarily interesting what it is.
Changing when we zoom out of the system, or if it's proportional to temperature.
If it's proportional to the temperature, it's proportional to T minus TC.
Yeah, yeah. But like the temperature shouldn't be changing when you zoom out of the system, right?
Well, okay. So zoom out of the system. The temperature is not changing. That's correct. But what is changing is the TC in some sense. So really, you know, we are taking. You see that this guy has TC different than that guy, right? So you are basically taking into account the fluctuations as you are zooming out of the system. As you are doing this Wilsonian renormalization, you take into account fluctuations. Fluctuations can change the critical temperature.
So J
is J, whatever it is. But by just saying, we have found in the mean field theory approximation that the critical temperature is exactly equal to J. So this won't be true if you take fluctuations into account.
I have a question about the board right in front of you. When we first linearized
this thing?
Yeah. When we first linearized these equations, we were interested in first order and epsilon, right? So how come for the upper right entry, we...
This one here?
We didn't include, for example, because R is proportional to epsilon, you said. So why isn't the denominator contribute a first order term?
We probably could have had, but you see that it doesn't really matter for the eigenvalues. So whatever stands there, I still have the quasi-diagonal.
It'll change the direction of...
It will slightly change the direction, that's true, yeah. That's true, but the eigenvalues do not change, and it's really, yeah, it's a good point. Okay, so now this is great. So now we have done the analysis of what's happening with the fixed points, and what's happening, you know, why maybe the Gaussian fixed point domain field theory is good in D bigger than 4, but why it is not good in D smaller than 4. So now let's use this knowledge. And let's triumph and calculate the right critical exponents. Okay, so this is our last step. So that was part 3. So part 4. Critical exponents. Critical exponents, and you can call it a triumph of this procedure here. So we have learned lots of properties, but we still haven't calculated the critical exponents. So let's do it. Okay. So now, let me just, you know, remind you what these critical exponents are. So remind that they characterize properties of some physical quantities. So in particular, you have critical exponent alpha, which tells you how much the specific heat diverges. You have the critical exponent beta, which tells you how does the odor parameter behave in the vicinity of the continuous phase transition. Then chi, which is dm over dB, characterize your critical exponent gamma. And then b is proportional to m to power delta. So that's the critical exponent delta, how the odor parameter responds to an external magnetic field exactly at t equal to t critical. And finally, we had the critical exponents related to the correlation function, which was, so there was something exponential of minus r divided by xi, where xi is the correlation length, and then r to power d minus 2 plus eta. So this guy is called anomalous dimension. Anomalous dimension. And then this xi diverged with the critical exponent nu. Okay, so this is what we want to calculate now, is what are the values of these critical exponents here? Alpha, beta, gamma, delta, nu, and eta. Okay, and also remind you that in yesterday's tutorial, we have seen that not all of these critical exponents are actually independent. not all are independent. And so you derive these beautiful scaling laws. And there is four of them. And some of them are valid, some of them are not. So Rushbrook tells you that alpha plus 2 beta plus gamma equals to 2. So you derive this thing from a scaling hypothesis. However, this can be already derived in thermodynamics. And so you don't need any, you know, scaling anything. You can just play with specific heats and stuff like that. And for classical systems, the specific heats are always positive. And playing with that, you can show that this equality actually must be true. So Rushbrook actually very, very generic thing, very, very generic scaling law. It's always valid almost. So then you have Griffiths, similar status. So Griffiths, alpha plus beta times delta plus 1 equals to 2. So that's another one which is very, very generic and can be derived just from thermodynamic considerations. Then you have Fisher, which tells you that gamma equals to nu times 2 minus eta. Okay, so this one is a little bit more subtle. And finally, you have Josephson, which tells you that alpha equals to 2 times minus nu d, where d is the number of spatial dimensions. And so this one actually may not be valid. It's the one which is dimension dependent, which requires extra hypothesis, this hyperscaling hypothesis, and that may not be valid. So that's why I put a star there. So anyway, if all of them are valid, then out of these six, you have four relations, so you have only two independent. So perhaps only two independent. Two independent. So now why I'm talking about this is that it gives you a very nice way how to cheat on the homework. So where I have asked you to calculate the critical exponents. And so what is obvious from this analysis is that maybe it's enough actually to calculate 2. And then once you calculate 2, you can use these guys to calculate the rest. Okay, so that's the way how to simplify your life in the homework. And of course, that's the way I'll simplify my life here as well. So, although you can calculate each critical exponent really independently, and then you can verify are these relations actually satisfied or not. So, for those who want to be very good. So now, let's do this. So, we know how the flow looks like. And so let's use it for calculating these critical exponents. So close to critical point and under RG flow in fictitious time in time L, we have the following things. So we are gathering everything which we have learned in our Wilsonian normalization thing. So we first had to rescale the momenta. So k tilde was k times b. That means that x tilde in these steps have to go like opposite like that. So it's x over b. And we set b equal to e to the l. Because we are doing small steps, we are considering L small. But now, actually, once we know the whole flow, we can consider L anything. Okay? So we know that. Second, we know that the wave function actually got renormalized under the flow. So this is phi tilde x tilde. If you write it in the k representation as we did, also this dd k tilde 2 pi to power d phi tilde k tilde e to k x. Okay, so now you can write down what it gives you in terms of k and x, and phi without tilde. So this is equal to. So you see that k tilde is k times b, so just from the measure, I'm picking up a factor of b to power d. Okay, so this is b to power d, d dk, 2 pi to power d. Okay, so now you have to do the wave function normalization. And so remember, we had like phi slow is phi tilde divided by z, and we found what that z is. So this is precisely what I'll just write down. So now instead of phi tilde k tilde, you have b to minus d plus 2 minus eta divided by 2 times phi slow of k. So this is the wave function renormalization. That's what we also learned. And of course, k tilde times x tilde is just k times x. So e to a k times x. Yep. So now I can take this factor b to some power, this guy here, I can take it out. And so what you have learned is that this is equal to b to d minus 2 plus eta divided by 2. And then you have an integral d dk to pi d phi slow k e to a I k x, which is just phi of x. Okay, so you have learned that in each step, or more generally, if you flow along some finite L, then this is how the phi changes according to this factor b here. Okay, so that's one thing which we have learned. Another thing which we have learned is that we know how decouplings, when we have the diagonal thing actually in the along these principal directions, how they change, and precisely those things. So we have learned that t tilde is just t times e lambda tl, and that u tilde is u e lambda u l. Well, okay, so that's what we have learned there. I'm just setting t0 to be my original t and u0 to be my original u. Okay. Finally, we need to know what the correlation function is. And so it was just magnetization at one point times magnetization another point, average of that, minus magnetization average at one point times magnetization average at the other point. So now we know, we have learned that what corresponds to the magnetization is really the field phi. Okay, so that was at least in, yeah. So basically what you can do is that you define g of x as phi of x, phi zero, minus phi of x, phi zero here. Okay, so this is how you define the correlation function. So now you can look at how does. So of course the correlation function depends on phi and x, but phi and x depends on, you know, they evolve under the Archy flow according to this thing here. Okay. So now we use the fact that g is quadratic in phi. Okay. So that means that g at x T and U. So now I'll be plugging there phi x, so I have to put this guy here on the other side. Well, I should have done that. Well, let's not do it. So first, b d minus 2 plus eta, because it's quadratic, in phi, and then g, and so under the arch flow, x goes to x over b, and t goes to t tilde, which is t times e lambda t times l, and u goes to u tilde, which is u e lambda u l. Okay, so this is what we conclude by putting everything together. So now I wrote something stupid. Sorry. So this is, I'm sorry, x tilde, t tilde, u tilde, b to d minus 2 eta. Oh no, what is it I'm doing? Sorry. This is what it is, right? So I want to find g, x tilde, t tilde, u tilde. So now I'm just plugging whatever I land there. So it's g of x over b, t e lambda t l, u e lambda u l. Okay. And then you know that this is quadratic in phi. So that's why there is this b to d minus 2 plus eta. Now it's quadratic. Just skip one step. Sorry for that. And then of g of x and t and u. This is what I wanted to write down. Sorry for that. My mistake. Okay. And of course you can put it on the, you can evaluate what g of x and t and u is as a function of the other one by simply putting 1 over b there. So this is equivalent to saying that g of x, t, and u is b to minus t minus 2 plus eta times g of x over b, t e lambda t l, u e lambda u l. Okay, so this is the same thing. So that's the master formula. And based on this master formula, you can derive all the critical exponents. So sorry for making the mistake, but is this clear? So I'm just writing g, x tilde, t tilde, u tilde. I'm plugging everything I land, right? So it's just g of x over b. And then I know how t evolves and how u evolves. But I know that this thing is quadratic. So I have to, I know that this thing actually must be how the fields transform, but it's quadratic in fields, so this must be true. And then if you put this guy here, then you derive at that formula over there. So now this is the master formula. Let's use it in a sneaky way. So the first thing which we want to learn is, so let us start exactly at fixed point. Where t equals to 0 equals to u. So if t equals to 0 and u equals to 0, then we are getting out of this formula that g of x 0 and 0 is b to minus d minus 2 plus eta times g of x over b, 0 and 0. Okay, so now you may stare at this equation here. And you may conclude that actually, exactly at that critical point, g of x has to be some fraction of x. Okay, and so from here, your friend mathematician tells you that g of x 0 and 0 actually has to be proportional to x to d minus 2 plus eta. Okay, so if you plug it here, you'll find that that equation actually precisely gives you that. Okay, so we have learned that. But of course, we want to compare with how we defined. So remember, this eta here was the anomalous dimension which we got from how the coupling actually transforms. Right? So I defined R2 tilde as E to beta, as E to eta, as B to eta. And so I said, well, eta, it's a definition of eta, right? I call it anomalous dimension. But of course, now you want to make connection with whatever you know about how the correlation function has to look like. And you see that it's the same eta. So we are learning from here that this eta is really an anomalous dimension from before. So it's really the critical exponent eta. Okay. So that's one thing which we have learned. And so if you remember, we calculated eta in our randomization group thing, and we found that it's actually equal to 0. Right? So if you remember what we have found, is we found that R tilde is actually equal to 1. So we are learning the first thing about the critical exponent, and that we learn that even to the second order in the RG flow, eta is actually equal to 0. So now, second point is that let's move away from the fixed point, in t direction, well, this is fun. So now we consider g of x t, but we still have 0 here. Okay, we are not moving away in the u direction, we are just moving away in the t direction. So we have that. So this is b to minus d minus 2 plus eta g x over b and t e lambda t l and 0 from our master's formula. And now the sneaky part is, this is true for any b. True for any b, right? Not be true for any b. So really the sneaky idea is to choose b equals to x. So specifically, this will be true if you set b equals to x. And then what you are learning is that g, x, t, and 0 equals to x minus d minus 2 plus eta times g of 1, and then t. And so remember, this b was e to the l. Right, so this is actually x to power lambda t. Okay. So this is, we just plugged b equal to x, and we use the fact that b is e to the l. So e to the l is x times lambda t. Okay. So now we want to again compare with how does the function, correlation function, has to look like. We know that it's given by 1 over x to t minus 2 plus eta, which is what we are getting there precisely. But we also know that whatever is left there has to be a function of x over xi. Okay? So we, so by comparison, we require that this thing is some function of x over xi. Require so that, well, we know that that function is actually exponential of minus x over xi, but let this just be some any function, doesn't matter. Okay, so require so that we have a match with whatever that formula is over there. Okay. Well, so one is one, so that's not a function of anything. So this is the only argument which is over here. So this thing here must be x over xi. So it must be some function of x over xi. Okay, so let's write a miraculous identity that x to lambda t times t, or is actually x times t to 1 over lambda t times lambda t. Certainly true. And this actually, I'm saying, has to be something like x over xi to lambda t. So what you are learning from here is that xi is actually proportional to t to minus 1 over lambda t. So this is the only way. Think about this. So it's not maybe immediately obvious, but I know that this thing here, that thing here, has to be written as some function of x over xi. And the statement is that if that is true, then xi actually has to be given by this. Yes?
Kind of hyperscaling assumption.
I don't think there is, it's just pure math. I don't think there is any there.
You're assuming that the only scale relevant is
no, so I'm just comparing this whatever I see there, right? I know that it must be, g must be a function of x over xi. I don't think there is any, it's just pure math here. There's no scaling here. So now if you compare with this xi with that xi, so that xi has the definition of the new critical exponent. And so you compare that, and you are learning from here that actually the critical exponent nu has to be equal to 1 over lambda t. So isn't this beautiful? So just, you know, we have done some linearization. We found some eigenvalues. And now we are learning, actually, these eigenvalues precisely tell you what the critical exponent is. OK. So now you can calculate what that critical exponent is. We are interested in these more than four dimensions, because that's our real world. So then we have to use the lambda t eigenvalue, which corresponds to the Wilson-Fisher fixed point. And so I don't know if that eigenvalue is still somewhere, but you can definitely find it in your notes. So we learn that nu is 1 over lambda t, and it's given by that Wilson-Fisher fixed point, lambda t, and this is 2 minus epsilon over 3. So this was the one. If it were the Gaussian, it would just be 2. So very good. So if you have Gaussian, it's 1 over 2. So now, if you remember what the critical exponent was for the Gaussian one, it was precisely 1 half. So in b bigger than 4, 1 half is correct. But in the smaller than four, it's the Wilson-Fisher one, so it's this one here. And so if you do small epsilon expansion, you find that this is 1/2 plus epsilon over 12. So it's not 1/2, but it's actually, so this is for d smaller than 4, and this is for d bigger than 4. Okay, so the Gaussian thing, 1/2 is correct for d bigger than 4 and gives you nu equal to 1/2. And for d smaller than 4, you have 1/2 plus epsilon over 12. Okay. So now I don't have time to calculate the other critical exponents, but it's okay because you will calculate them in today's tutorial. So that's fine. But however, we have already calculated two of them. We calculated that eta equals to 0, and we calculated that nu is equal to this guy here. And so you can use the scaling laws to actually calculate the other ones. Okay. So now I'll leave that to you in your tutorial to calculate these things and compare the things. But let me just draw this beautiful table here. Okay, so complete summary. So we have the critical exponent here, and then we have the mean field theory approximation, and then we have the RG epsilon expansion. Epsilon expansion. And then we have actually the simulation. So numerics. And so this will be for Ising in three dimensions. Ising in d equal to 3, the physical dimension. Okay, so we have this table here. And you know, we just state the results. So we have critical exponent alpha, beta, gamma, delta, nu, and eta. So in the mean field theory, we are getting 0, 1/2, 1, 3, 1/2, and 0. So this is what we are getting in the mean field theory approximation. So now we calculated eta in the RG expansion. We found that it's again equal to 0, at least to our approximation. We found 0 here. So now this is not like a huge improvement. But the reason is that even in numerics, actually, this is very, very close to 0. So this actually, if you do the numerics, is 0.036. Okay, so actually, the prediction equal to 0 is quite good. So now we calculated the nu here. So we found that it's nu, it's 1/2 plus epsilon over 12. So now we are in three dimensions, so epsilon is equal to 1. So it's 1/2 plus 1/12. And if you calculate that, you get 0.58. Okay. The true value is 0.63. Okay, so we definitely are getting closer. We are halfway there. So here we are getting 0.5. You keep getting 0.58. And the true value is 0.63, so we are halfway already there. If you include more terms, actually, it will be more precise. So now what you will find in your tutorial is that for the exponent delta, you find that this is 3 plus epsilon. Well, epsilon is 1, so this is 4. And the true value is 4.79. Okay. Well, now perhaps the most impressive is the beta. So let me do beta first. So beta is 1/2 here. In the RG expansion, you find it's 1/2 minus epsilon over 6, which is 0.33. And the true value is 0.326. This is very, very close. For alpha, you have epsilon over 6. It's 1 over 6. It's 0.17. And this guy is 0.11. And finally, for gamma, we have 1. And then we have 1 plus epsilon over 6, which is 1.17. And the true value is 1.237. Okay, so now you see that certainly this something, you know, crazy expansion, small epsilon expansion around four dimensions, around unphysical dimension, is actually, you know, getting you already in the second order approximation, already getting you something which is much, much closer to the true critical exponents than the mean field theory approximation. And so if you go to higher order, you can make it even more precise. You cannot make it absolutely precise. People are still trying to find these critical exponents exactly. But anyway, this was, you know, good enough so that it got a Nobel Prize. So let me stop here. So maybe just, you know, to say that, yeah, the RG flow is you know, and the Wilsonian normalization is very good. It gives you the critical exponents. It explains why the mean field theory is a good approximation in d bigger than four dimensions. It explains the universality of continuous phase transitions. And actually, it sort of also explains why simple models work. Right? So in this Wilsonian normalization, we learned that only the relevant operator couplings actually matter. It's the relevant couplings are precisely those which drive you away. And so that's why actually simple models work in condensed matter physics. For example, the model of non-interacting electrons, you will study condensed matter course, is a very good thing because, of course, you have some complicated multiparticle interactions, but these multiparticle interactions are irrelevant for macroscopic physics. And so it's because of the same reason as we have done here. Well, thank you so much. Are there any questions? Yeah.
Up here, when we were looking at the correlation G, we figured out what U was, a critical exponent, by probing around the fixed point where U equals to zero.
Yeah.
But that's not where that's for the mean field theory fixed point. Is that right? Or
sorry. So yeah, I was lousy here. Okay. So what I mean by U here, it's really not U, but it's U tilde.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, so I didn't want to have two tildes.
Yep.
So sorry for that. So I'm really doing, so if you look at these things here, what I'm doing here, I'm really using the diagonal form of the RG flow equations. So I'm actually using the linearized thing around the fixed point rather than the full coupling there. Sorry for that. Yeah. Very good questions. Other questions?
How did you know eta was zero from here?
So somewhere along the way, if you look yesterday, what we have done is that we defined eta, which coupling constant was it? R2 tilde, something like that. So we defined eta as something like R2 is b to the power eta, right, along the way. And then when we actually calculated what R2 is, we found that this is equal to 1. Right, so yesterday, sometime yesterday, we found the system. So from there, you calculate, you conclude that eta has to be equal to zero because b is bigger than one. Okay, so I just used that result from yesterday that we found that eta is equal to zero. Now I show that this eta, as you define it here, is precisely that eta as you define it in your correlation function. And that's why that eta is equal to zero as well.
I think this was the first order, right?
I think it survives in the second order as well. I'm not sure, but I showed it in the first order only. Yeah.
Do the numerics satisfy the scaling laws?
I think so. Yeah, they should. You can check.
Because it seems like you're calculating everything other than nu and eta from the scaling laws. So of course,
what you will see today in your tutorial is that you can calculate all these things independently. And then you can check whether the scaling laws are true. The statement is all these things should satisfy the scaling laws, even if you calculate them independently from this RG flow equation. and this thing will satisfy as well. At least the reasonable scaling laws. Other questions? Very good. So I think we triumphed, and we calculated the critical exponents.